Mr. James relayed in. Talking about accents and so on, it's a Durham battalion, but what about your officers? Did any of those have like a regional accent? Or were they?
They're all posh, even. They're really posh. They're not one or two of them have accents. I particularly remember that the Mortimer commander, he was on Morpeth or somewhere like that. He was after all an ex-rank, I think. He had a Geordie accent, which was unusual. I mean, he never forgot it. But the others, no, there was Sean Walson, of course, he had a posh Northern accent. He was a real posh chap, he was. But I understand what he said, but he spoke with Geordie accent. I mean, he told me off, he said, what are you doing? It's really different. I suppose, so it's not so. But what is he doing? I said, I was selling houses. He said, selling houses, houses.
Were there any examples of officers who'd like decided to try to talk posh, and you know, was there any of that?
No, I think myself that they were educated camps. Major Wayland was really cool, he was, and he's very raw,
What about Major Balance?
Oh, Balance was an educated man, and I think that his father was a surgeon or a doctor, something like that. He was obviously from a very, very educated and privileged family, Major Balance was. He was very posh. A lot of the officers were naturally so. They never changed. They were privileged. They were born as servicemen to their mothers, and they came from very wealthy families, and KBX, Cambridge, and things like that. I mean, I know that these days my son went to Cambridge, but I used to visit him in Cambridge, and of course there was all this big thing. I realized up there that my son went to Cambridge in the 70s that spoke like
So was there a sense at this time that there was like a leadership class of officers?
Oh,
do you
absolutely.
Think that was,
oh yes, absolutely, leadership class. That's right. We had a couple of large corporals, one with large corporal Harrison, who sort of posh, and they gave him a commission. Only because I think that he went to university and I had the manuscript of paper. And he spoke posh, and he was made a second lieutenant at the same time as Arthur Pearson was commissioned. But sadly, I think he lost his life in battle. He was all very sad about that. He lost his life. He was killed the first day.
What about Arthur Pearson? What kind of style did he have? What kind of
he was
verbally?
He spoke the Geordie accent, but it was clear. It was he could understand what he said.
And was it a gruff kind of voice or a commanding tone?
Arthur Pearson's voice was one voice in a thousand, and nobody could imitate him. But I wouldn't say that he was so wonderful, but that he had this particular rasp now and again in his voice.
And was that a frightening thing, do you think, for the enlisted men?
No, he was sort of it. He spoke, you're a deacon, and I'm deacon.
Staying on the subject of accents, you talked a little bit about, private soldiers from, a more privileged background. Was there any examples where you'd find you'd get a man like that would come in for a lot of stick from the Geordie soldiers?
Oh,
Where you get a
No, I didn't notice it. The Geordie soldiers, they were naturally, they would never change. They were uninhibited, and they had no side to them. They were themselves, as men, you know, like the Welsh people are. I mean, with the Welsh people, if you find in Wales, for example, you know, though, I mean, I went to the elementary school and went to grammar school, but I would never be able to put anything any superior action on, because they'd hold you down. You know, they are hard-working, honest people would say, what are you talking about for?
Do you think that, in terms of men applying to be officers, do you think that might have put some ordinary soldiers off? I mean, you've talked earlier about how a soldier would be reluctant to take a stripe on the basis that he would lose his friends.
Right.
Do something similar, could that be happening in terms of...
Well, I think that those people who became officers probably aspired to do so and wanted to do so, and they didn't know that they wanted to be commissioned. There are others, I know, who wouldn't want to be commissioned. I, for one, I didn't want it. I was quite happy. I never wanted to be called happy. And I had a board bench actually, and the board learned it was now. It's 60 years ago. I mean, you know, when I left Wales, I spoke very Welsh. But I also went to grammar school, and I could pass a sentence. I knew what the object and the verb and the subject was in a sentence, because I learned grammar. But I didn't put it on.
And so, did you never, that was never an ambition to be an officer?
What to be an officer?
Were you ever approached? Because obviously you were, you know, you were a sergeant.
At the very end, I was approached. At the very end, after we left, when I was given re-up, a month's leave in July 1994.
Oh, well, we'll get onto that in due course. But at this stage, when you were in the DLI, there was never an approach or a...
Never approved.
Yeah.
Never approved.
Now, in terms of... officers and NCOs and so on, who do you think was, who actually ran the company, you know, the day-to-day organisation of the company? Was it the officers or the NCOs?
Well, of course, the company commanders, they were the company commanders, and they knew their statistics, we knew that they were in charge. But the company is not major. After, when the battalion was a couple of years old, it was formed in August 1940, I'll be going on to the sea after the August 1942 for guns, only 2 years ahead. But the battalion got more efficient day by day as things went on. And the senior NCOs didn't have to be told what to do. At a certain period of their training, they knew what was expected of them. And things went smoothly. There was, experience is learning by making mistakes and not making the same mistake again. And a lot of mistakes were made in the early days. But
what kind of mistakes?
Well, all sorts of mistakes, you know. For example, it happened to me when I was a senior sergeant. Again, before you dismissed your class, you had your squad with the officer that had been there standing nearby, you would say, "Officer on parade, dismiss!" And they'd turn to the right and salute. But then I said once, "Officer on dismiss, parade." He said, "You understand?" And he said, you knew that you made it. "Sorry, sir. That's what I thought. you, these little things. They won't be perfect. But insofar as the inefficiency is concerned, it's a different thing. Like not being able to read a map.
understand there were some, you were talking about sides and stern.
Oh, absolutely.
Were there any other examples of that where an NCO just couldn't really sustain
this? There were some who were a little bit backward. And they would remain, they would get devotion. You know, there were some youth who were just starting to bomb and didn't shine.
Now, in Winchelsea, could you just talk a little bit about how you would entertain yourselves at this stage? I mean, obviously, it was a very small village. What would people do on the time?
Absolutely. Well, just like now, it's a very small village, of course, and we were cut off from Wye, and nobody had any transport. And there was a big one, cut to a 1500 truck, and that was with the rations, mainly, and getting supplies to stores. Nobody had any transport, nonsense. I mean, there were 60 bikes, but they weren't allowed to be used at all because they were for operational purposes. So what happened was we discovered talent that was in the region, in Winchester anyway. And so Succubus Games was a marvelous pianist. And there was a little hall behind the new inn pump in the field, the village hall. And George Broadhead was keen on organizing dances. So he decided to contact what we call the ATAI, the ATS girls, who were living in Ore, little place, just outside of Winchester, near Hastings. And there was this ATS detachment there, and they were informed that we had a pianist and a trombonist and a drummer, a 3- or 4-piece band.
And you remember who the other members of the band were?
I can see them, but I can't remember their names. I can see them. And George Borden was the announcer, MC. And Super Slave was a pianist, and he was kingpin because he created the tempo, and he was very good at it.
Was he the Mighty Atom, as mentioned?
Mighty Atom.
Why was he called that?
Yes, Mighty Atom, because he was about 4 foot 10 tall, and he was a funny little brother. He was from Leeds. The first day I met him was in Winchester, because he came from Iceland, from some detachment there. And he was really broad Yorkshire, He didn't like me. I told him a little story about myself. Against myself, actually.
And what was that?
Well, he said, what were you doing in City Street? So I said, I was employed by the Metropolitan Railway Country System to sell houses. And he said, yeah. And I said, what were you doing? So he said, I was employed as a caterpillar. I said, that's very interesting, because I mean, this is not all sort of thing. And he said, well, you earning very much money in that job? And I said, no, as a matter of fact, I said, I augmented my wages by some little thing that happened. He said, in which way? So I said, when I was in Norfolk Hills, the express dairy milkman said to me, anybody moving in shortly? So I said, yes. He said, could I have the addresses? I said, yes, I've got them here. Yes, one was from Cornwall and one was from Hertfordshire. So he said, well, I'll write to them and tell them that I'm the milkman here. When are they moving in? I said, next week. Another so-and-so. One of them was where the girl from Pitty Lee was the maid. So he said, right, so I'll give you 10 shillings for your information. And if I get the or custom, I'll give you £1. And I'll exit 10 shillings. So I said, great. So he gave me 10 bob twice for the addresses, and I thought, this is a good racket. This is my news. I can keep moving. Anyway, he got one, and he gave me the other. So I thought, my God. I've got 10 bob for one that he's got, but I've lost the other one. So I went to the United Dairies bloke and I said, If I give you names and addresses, he said, I said, I think that people moving in, can we get some arrangement? He said, aye. I said, you see, so I can tell him everything next Wednesday. So he said, I can return both for the address and a pound for the good business. He was wondering about entrepreneurial. So I told this thing to Larry Gaines. He said, he said, you're a twister. He said, I don't like that sort of thing. I said, I'm bloody sorry I told you, you little bastard. Honestly. So that was a bad beginning. And but I was honest, you see. I didn't want the truth. And he held that against me all through the service that it was on. You know. And we didn't get on.
So he had his dance. Was that later the battalion dance band that you mentioned?
Yes, it was, eventually. But this was the reason. When we were at Winchester, I was a good musician. So the ATS girls, we would send over 1,500 trucks to bring these ATS girls to Winchester for the dance. And I must say, they were a very happy crowd. And quite a few of the agents were made as well. So they'd go in, and there was a little dance hall behind the room. And they'd have a dance, you know, and I remember the song for a time, you know, you be the man, and all the thing, and like it's a bit of healing stuff, you know. And you say, the sweetest thing.
Who would be the vocalist? Who would be the vocalist?
There was one bloke who had a good voice. I forget his name now, but we did have the odd song sung.
And this would be from men that were in the company.
That's right. We had. I mean, there was one particular singer who was in B Company, and his name was Anderson, and he had a lovely silver. He gave one or two songs like that. One particular song he could also sing, straight ballad songs. And the one that would always stick in my mind was, just a little love, a little kiss, I would give you all I have for this, you know. And he'd sing it beautifully. To take his time and get applause.
And how many people would attend these dances with them?
Oh, it was there was nothing else to do.
So
what happened was, you go along to the dance, and I couldn't dance the coffee. You can with hot air boots on, but I couldn't dance the coffee anyway. And so I go into the living room, and I have a couple of pints. And then somebody might say, "I'll be doing a dance. Should we go along to the dance hall?" We've got a couple of pints already. We had about a couple of pints. If somebody said, "Oh, that's an ATS girl," he caught my eye. And it was Penny Markland. And she was a very smart girl, I must say. She was really a smart girl. Kind of Markland. And she had an eye on the head of that. And so she came up and she says, "Come on, let's have this dance." I said, "I can't dance at all." She said, "I'll teach you." So we'd go around and we'd do a shuffle, you know, sort of fox club, you know. And she tried to teach me to dance, but with my big baby boots, I walked all over, you know. However, I did eventually learn to do a waltz on a slow fox club, but I couldn't do anything else. And then he'd go into the new room and have a drink, and then back again. And then all too soon, the dance was over after about a couple of hours, 2 hours. And off they went again.
And would they be like a dance every week, or often would they be?
Maybe every week, yeah.
And would they be like all ranks affairs? Would everybody?
Everybody, yeah.
Officers,
yeah,
privates?
The officers would be shy. I remember the MLO used to turn up sometimes, I remember. And he lived along the Melody Wind.
Can you remember who that was?
His name now, but I remember if I could see him.
What about Balance and Whalen and people of that kind?
No. The company commanders never did. No. But the MO did.
What about the platoon officers?
No, they didn't.
What would be, would there be any, if you were a sergeant and you danced with a private soldier, would there be any problems about that? Or
the same, I was deaconess, and Penny Martha was sweeter than me, so sweet that she eventually got stronger and stronger. She says, I'd like you to meet my father and mother. They're coming down from Blackburn to Hastings to see me, and I'd like you to come along and see my father and mother. She said, only because she had a brother who was a naval officer on Castle Champlain. And the terrible time he got to Peter when he lost his life. So he just suffered this bereavement. And she was very sad, and so was her family. And I went down to Hastings to meet her mother and father. And we corresponded when I was abroad as well. But I wasn't. I made it clear to her, you know, that I had no ambitions at all. And she found something else. I wouldn't tell me so.
At the dances, would the men outnumber the women, or would the women outnumber the men?
It was about even, I reckon. As I said, some of the ladies once sprang up, and so consequently they were. Some of them came there, and they said, "Where have you gone?" I came to part of their night. But generally speaking, the atmosphere was very good.
And was the this was just it was just DLI men. There was no Air Force or.
No, it was all no. But we have that.
What about the locals? Were there any like locals?
No locals. Oh, there was one or two locals only. I'd say most of the population were evacuated.
And they'd be like local girls and.
But they were local. They were local young married women. Only one or two. And you knew where they lived, you know. But
And was there any sense of these married women like carrying on with their husbands away, or was any of that?
There was one who everybody knew, you know. And I can hear that she's keeping it endless. opposite the company office, incidentally, down that road, which was the old former barracks of former days against the French soldiers. They were British soldiers' barracks. In that street, opposite the company office.
Now, would the dancers be free, or would you?
Oh yeah, all free.
And would there be alcohol in the dance, or would there?
No, because it was kind of walking the park. No.
So on the same theme of entertainment, how many pubs were in the village, and which?
Well, there was the inn, which was the one right opposite the church in the guest position. And as I say, very short behind it. And down the bottom of the hill, there was this other pub. And I only went in there last year and I had a jolly good meal and stayed there the night. But I said, man, I forgot the name of that pub now. But I made a note of it at the time, it's that brass and white. But it's at the bottom of the hill. And that pub at the bottom of the hill was a very popular pub of troops because it had a widow keeping it. She was a raven haired black beauty.
Can you remember her name?
I can't remember her name, but she was in her 30s. She was in her 30s, and she was glamorous. And one of her admirers, actually.
Did she have admirers in the battalion, though?
Well, you know, yes, she did. I mean, the bloody place was full of troops, only because of her, really. And she was a widow. And she had long black hair. Massive of it, and she was beautiful as well. And she obviously made fortune keeping it up.
And those are the only two places?
Only two places. Mm-hmm. That's right. Only two places.
And so on a.
And Rye, of course. I was in Rye for some weeks before I went to the street. And so I enjoyed the nightlife in Rye.
And how was that different?
That was very good, because it had a cinema. They had a dance place there as well. And the rest of the battalion was so popular in Rye that I think half the troops there got married to the white girls. And they loved the DLI because it was so well behaved. But why really it was a nice place for evening entertainment. And I was sorry to read why at one of the when there was no
So at Winchelsea, on your nights off, it would be difficult to get anywhere else, would it?
Oh, it was really dark, the blackout. Once darkness descended, it was a 2.5 or 3 mile walk from Rye to Winchelsea, and or vice versa. And a lonely road across a marsh, and not very many people, nobody mentioned walking.
What about your relationships with the locals in Winchelsea? I know most of them have been evacuated.
Very few locals. Mr. and Mrs. McKenzie kept the pub.
That was a new inn.
Yeah, the landlord and landlady. She's a very nice person. She was. She made herself up. She was a woman about in the 50s. But every night she was in a grand apartment. She was well groomed, you know, and very, very good at conversation. And I've had many a serious chat with Mrs. McKenzie. You know, when they went to was quiet. And I happened to have a chat as well. My little son, I remember that. As far as the locals are concerned, there was a retired bloke and his wife. And they were retired. And they hadn't moved out of the village. And they lived in a very attractive little house with hanging baskets opposite the church, down near the Sergeant's Mess, actually. And they were the only ones that I remember who were in the village, you know, at large. I mean, I spoke to them about 3 times.
Other veterans have talked, that were at Winchelsea, have talked about two elderly ladies that used to provide cakes and tea for the troops. Do you know anything about that?
No. As I say, there were one or two people like that, but they were probably well up by a sea company, by the way, up at the top.
Yeah, I think it was a sea company, man. That's
tree where John Wesley used to preach as a tree there, you see. There's a new inn, and there's along there, there's the MI room. And there were one or two living in the houses there, which I never got to, you know. But I know that there were not very many, but there were one or two. And there was a tree, a big tree, with a plaque on it that John Wesley preached there when he was in his heyday. And opposite there and round about in one or two houses that were kept by wealthy people who had the courage to stay. But I only deal with one, I can only remember one couple.
You talked about the medical inspection room being in Winchelsea. Was that for the whole battalion?
Yeah, the medical officer, yes.
So if a man from one of the other companies needed treatment...
He would probably go into Y to see to the other companies. That is, Winchelsea medical room was there with Peter Griffin. Peter wasn't there all the time. So that shows you he was the medical sergeant.
And he was a Benton Hearts man as well.
Benton Hearts man, with rosy cheeks and a red nose, Peter, that's right. And he was the medical sergeant, and he was all the way through. He started stretching out eventually, in action, Peter Griffin.
And would it be possible to go to Hastings from where you were? Would people be able to go there?
Well, Hastings was only about 5 or 6 miles away, but as I say, the transport, personal attractions, the bus services, nothing. I never went into Hastings once for the night out or anything like that. It was all barbed wire and mines anyway. All along that coast, Campbell's Hands, it was war. And the Winchelsea Beach, I've got a photograph of it over there, and I've since been back there. Last year I went back there. Even last year, it was absolutely deserted. Not one on it, all big pebbles and whatnot. Very deep beach, steep down into the sea, and it's there. But I dare say in the summer now, though in peacetime, the chalets will be occupied by Londoners who will probably have a weekend place to go to, and they will probably. But I went there last year with my wife, and I spent, as I said, the time I stayed in Winchelsea, and the time I slept overnight. And we went down to Winchelsea Beach, and for the experience. And we walked along the commons where we saw that there wasn't so nobody there at all.